We're the Pragmatic Doulas.
This is a podcast where we talk all about birth and other interesting things.
Birth may be a goddess, but she doesn't want to be worshipped. She wants to be respected. She doesn't want incense. She wants
common sense.
All right, we are the Pragmatic Doulas. Hello and welcome to episode 162.
We are the Pragmatic 2 today.
Yes, not the Pragmatic 3, the Pragmatic 2. Nope.
Today we are Pragmatically 2. We have Suzanne, who is off doing that parenting thing, that adulting thing. And it is, you know, I am really enjoying this thing we're doing where when one of us needs to step back, you just do it. It's like, it is a given that that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And the other two are going to, or sometimes even one, we're probably going to come to a day where we might individually podcast once or twice because two of us are busy doing shit. Because it seems to be we're in that place right now where stuff is coming up.
Yeah.
I'm totally down with that. I think it'd be fun. You get to dominate.
I will admit, having done a solo podcast, it's not easy.
No.
I don't even do it anymore, to be quite honest. My birth and parenting things podcast has kind of gone by the wayside. This is too hard.
I guess just keep it going. I am amazed when I do see those individual podcasts that do go on and on for years. I'm like, really? That's wild. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's for the most part, like when you've got like guests and stuff and, you know, or you're doing reviews and things like that. But the way this one goes, it's more sort of discussion and a little bit of education and whatnot. I think it'd be hard. I don't know. Who knows? At the rate we're going, we're going to, because we only have one, we don't have any in the can. This is like record and post. So
we like to live on the edge.
We're going to get messed up at some point.
So we're not that pragmatic, I guess.
No, not lately. Our pragmatism is kind of waning.
That's okay. If this is how we live on the edge, I'll take it.
Yeah, true.
So in order to return to our pragmatic roots, though, how about I do our land acknowledgement?
Okay.
Okay, so to start off today, I'd like to recognize and acknowledge the traditional land and territory on which we are meeting today, or at least I'm meeting from Ajax. It's important, and this is a little piece of that educational component Kim just mentioned that we do. So if everyone wonders why certain components are included, here we go. It is important to make note of the relational and contextual quality of land acknowledgement protocols. An acknowledgement of the traditional territory is an invitation to reflect on personal relationships with Indigenous nations. And that means you, who's listening, in your area. When we acknowledge the treaty, we're asking individuals to explore the rights and responsibilities to place and people on the land that you live. Find out what treaty lands you're on. What does that look like? Where have the community failed? Where can the community do better? And when the land is acknowledged, we encourage you to seek out the history and teachings of the natural world as it was, as it should be returned to, of the land that you're actually living on. So those are things you can contextually do when you're thinking about a land acknowledgement for your own space. So I'd like to begin by acknowledging that the land on which I'm gathered, my family is being raised, that I am doing my work and recording this podcast is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Mississauga, adjacent to the Mississaugas of Scugog Island First Nation, and in the territory that's covered by the Williams Treaty. This place is and will continue to be home to Indigenous peoples. Let us move forward with kindness, respect, and an open heart to learning how we can do better. Thank you.
Excellent.
Merci.
All right.
So what are we talking about today?
Well, actually, before we get started, I wanted to give a shout out to a couple of people. It's been a while since we've done this, and we have a few people that have acknowledged us, so we'll acknowledge them. I think I may have said this one already, but I'm gonna say it again. it was a review that we got, a 5-star review that we got. Please feel free to 5-star review us or just review us at all. We don't care exactly what number. From Kate, I'm a new doula getting ready to jump in, but nervous. Coming across the podcast this week has been a dream for me. You guys are answering all my questions and more. Also, very much appreciated the opening land acknowledgement. So that's cool. And we also got some shout outs from Kath Backey. I hope I'm saying that right. Who is a physio, it seems, on Instagram. It's Fitnest Mama on Instagram. Hi guys, I have just come across your podcast. I'm looking forward to having a listen, from Catherine. And from Birth Wizard, I guess it's just Birth Wizard on Instagram. Hi, I'm a doula from Arizona. One of our American listeners, one of our many American listeners. Recently, my friend and I started a doula podcast, and I was on the hunt for other doula podcasts for doulas and not birthers. I came across your podcast last night and I enjoyed it. And I wanted to reach out and let you know how excited. My brain just shut off. I wanted to reach out and let you know I'm excited to share a similar space as y'all, and I appreciate the content you're making. She didn't say, I went back and asked what the podcast was called, but she didn't respond. So that's pretty cool. There you go.
That's very cool. I thought we could also give a shout out to our friends over at the Ontario Black Doulas Society. Hmm. They celebrated at the end of January their 1 year in like full production mode, full board in place, all of the things. And I wanted to give them a shout out for all the big work that they are doing and continuing to do behind the scenes. If you are ever looking, you know, we discussed before where to put monies that help communities. Ontario Black Doula Society is also somewhere where you can donate to help them continue the work that they're doing. You can find that information on their website, and the Ontario Black Doulas website is, just one moment,
because we're clearly prepared for this.
I'm looking at their link tree, but blackdoulas.ca, very easy to remember.
There you go. Awesome.
And it is Black History Month as well.
Yes, it is.
Now, one of my kids mentioned this the other day, and it is... I'm curious as to why they chose whoever they are. That's where I need to do a little bit of research. But why was it the shortest month of the year that they chose Black History Month? I mean,
I think that every year, like literally every year, I go, why did we pick the shortest month? Were none of the other months available? Did we pick it out of a hat? What? I mean, I'm sure it wasn't. I don't know. Whose decision was it? Who made this?
Let's be honest. I mean, there are events, many opportunities to learn during Black History Month. My kid's school is, their Black Student Council is holding a trivia night where kids between ages 8 and 15 can come on, and they run a trivia, like a fun trivia night. So that's about learning all about Black history here in Canada. Cool. And I mean, this can take place year round, but yeah, reach out, find out what's going on in your own community. I'd love to hear what's going on in your community for Black History Month.
I love the little pops of trivia that come up, you know, on your TikTok or the news or things like that. And did you know that the stoplight, the red, yellow, and green stoplight, was invented by a black man? Like something you use. I know. I don't know if it was the actual stoplight or if it was the configuration of red, yellow, green. I didn't dig into it, to be quite honest. I was in the car actually when I heard it. I'm like, well, that's super cool. Like something you see every goddamn day.
That we take advantage of. And I bet that person was not paid accordingly for that delivery.
Not likely. That's
what they came up with.
Not bloody likely. All right.
So there was actually also, so one of my favorite movies, I found out, Apollo 13, the woman who actually created the system that helped safely bring them home, Black woman named Katherine Johnson.
Yep.
Again, looking back at that time, I'm going to guarantee she was not paid accordingly for the work that she did. But it was and is attributed in the history books to a huge part of the reason they were able to safely bring the astronauts back home.
Was she not the one in Hidden Figures, the movie? Was that, or is that a different woman?
I think that was a different woman.
Oh.
But again, awesome movie. Awesome movie.
Cool. All right. Look, put your phone down and stop Googling. Just fucking love trivia and old stuff. I'm like, okay, well, now I need to know. It's funny. I read, you know, historical fiction and stuff like that. And I'll have my phone by my bed and I'm like, they're talking about some castle or something. I'm like, I don't know what that looks like. pull up my phone to get pictures of this actual castle, or, you know, oh, they're talking about a work of art. What does that actually look like? Who painted that? What's that? So I'm a bit weird that way. So we are talking about the many faces of postpartum support.
Absolutely. And so I was thinking about how this came about. This was Suzanne's baby, I believe. And it actually brought me back to, something we discussed many, many moons ago. And that is, what is the phrase? That holding space. Mm-hmm. So I don't find when we're discussing all the gamut of things that a postpartum doula can do when visiting a family is the hard part, or knowing what to do. Because when you have a list of things you can do, we generally speaking feel very well moving through that day with mm-hmm. the family.
Yep.
The hardest part of being a postpartum doula, and I get this question from newer doulas quite often, is when they'll say, my client just wants me to sit with her.
Yep.
My client just wants me to sit with them and chat. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to do.
It's like, well, you do know what to do. You sit and you chat. It's not hard.
Yes. If you're, that is probably like straight out of the gate, one of the hardest parts of being a postpartum doula, especially newer, where you feel like you want to come in and do all the things. And we see this with birth doulas too. We want to do all the things.
Yeah.
But often we will come in contact with someone who needs someone to not be bustling around their house.
No.
Not be supporting from the periphery. They want someone to sit in it with them, because it is for many, coming home, you're looking around your house with brand new parent eyes, mm-hmm. and it can be a very lonely place. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily need to laugh. You don't need to be made to see the brighter sides of things. Sometimes the best thing you can do is respect when you see that in somebody and just sit and sip tea with them. You might put your feet up and throw on a show. Mm-hmm. You might, and you know, then it might be time to nurse or feed the baby, and you can ask them, is that something you're wanting to do solo? Can I assist you with a good latch? Are you struggling with anything around the feeding? And you can lead a topic based on what the needs of the baby are at the time. But it is often the hardest part is to simply find your comfort in sitting in quiet mm-hmm. someone.
I had a client once when I wasn't actually a postpartum doula yet. I hadn't trained as one, but she had ended up having to have a planned cesarean for a breech baby. So I really loved this couple. So I offered to do some postpartum support with them to make up the funds. It was going to be like a couple of days here, a couple of days there. The first day or so when I got there, like the first day was really just sitting and talking and, you know, again, helping with that latch if it was necessary and, you know, and the 4 hours or whatever it was, you know, kind of just flew by. talking about the birth, talking about the recovery, talking about, you know, how they were feeling, you know, all of this stuff. And then the next day was, you know, maybe a little bit more what one might call productive, where, you know, feeding was going well. So it was, again, just some more talking, but folding laundry, you know, and there was a little bit more stuff. And then the next time I was there, it was like, okay, now I think maybe they feel comfortable. Now they're going to go for a nap. Like it was a gradual shift and change of how the work went on to be, to eventually, you know, laundry being put on, baby being in a nap, mom going for a nap, me going downstairs, cleaning the kitchen, you know, and putting dishes away and things like that, to that more, you know, pragmatic, practical stuff. So it isn't even that, like, if you get into a client and, you know, that first day is really just you sitting there, that is necessary. And being able to then slowly evolve into, you know, stuff, to the point where, you know, eventually, you know, we're just doing the practical things that they can eventually do themselves. You know what I mean? Like it went from sort of emotional support to gradually changing into physical support. And that is, I think, just because one day you're sitting there doing nothing, what you feel is nothing, it can be so something for somebody. Does that make sense? I have a headache, so I don't know if anything makes sense anymore.
That makes a whole lot of sense. And it goes back to that whole working yourself out of a job.
Right. I know some people hate that terminology, but that's my job. My job is to make you feel more comfortable doing what you need to do so that you don't need me anymore. Like, I hate that people hate that.
And well, also recently it came up, someone had posted that there was no reason for, or her description, or that person's description of a postpartum doula was that postpartum doulas are have no place in the postpartum. Taking over parenting, it's a colonized practice. But if this person had taken a postpartum training or done reading on it, it is actually parenting the parent. It isn't parenting the baby. It's been a good day if I come in and I've never had to touch your child, because my goal is to support you as the parent or parents through this transition. If you are well treated as the parent and you are cared for, then the baby's going to be just fine.
Yeah. Because we're not nannies, right? The whole idea is that we're not nannies. We're not coming in and looking after the baby while the birthing parent or the just birthed parent is like doing whatever. That's not our role.
No. So that was, it caused a little bit of a brief uproar. And then I stopped seeing anything more about it, because I think someone probably said, you're reading the wrong text.
Yeah.
I do think they were specifically speaking about initially night doulas, but there's as many night doulas I know who support families who are breastfeeding as families who are not breastfeeding. And they were complaining that the baby should be in the bed with the parent, but not all parents choose that.
No.
So to have someone you trust to recognize the signs of early ready to be nursed, you know, being able to come in and show you how to nurse sideline so you don't have to get up, you know, you're teaching those skills over time, and eventually the parent will feel comfortable getting up, or they might not even be able to get up and get that baby.
No.
Because they might have had a cesarean section and they're needing to rest, or they've been up all during the day with four other badass children and they just want to be able to lay still at night and have someone else bring them their baby. Do it, you know?
And I mean, who's to say? I had a client, she wasn't my client because I don't do night work, but they had hired an overnight doula because she had a medical condition. She had Lyme's disease. And she, the way Lyme's like manifests itself in so many different ways for different people, but for her, she could never sleep. She could never go to sleep. She was incapable of falling asleep. So what had to happen is when it came time to go to bed, she would have to take a sleeping pill. She would have to take a sleeping pill in order to sleep. So as a result, she wasn't getting up multiple times a night to feed that baby. So the decision was made that they were going to bottle feed baby. She would pump and things like that as best as she could. But no, she was not going to be getting up in the middle of the night. So what are you going to do? You're going to get your husband who's having, or your partner who's having to go back to work, get up multiple times a night? No, they also had two other children as well. It's like, so don't give me this bullshit that, you know, an overnight doula is just, you know, for lazy people, or because I've heard that one, or for, you know, the privileged and whatnot. Sometimes it's freaking necessary in order to survive your life with a new baby.
Absolutely. And if you have the funds to be able to support that, I mean, all the more power to you. Mm-hmm. All the more power to you. And it, you know what? In that instance, there is crossover between a doula, a nanny, or a night nurse, right?
Right.
But you've been chosen individually as a postpartum doula for a particular reason. We don't know what that is, mm-hmm. but it is what it is. Someone has been chosen for that role. So that person who wanted to make everything into a right or wrong, it just, there's nothing in parenting that is right or wrong.
I'm so sick of the black and white of it all. Mm-hmm. Life is a spectrum. Life is never this or that. It's always this, that, some of that, a couple of those, maybe a bit of this. I'm so tired of the black and white arguments of it has to be X or it has to be Y. And that's the end of that. And I'm so sick of being the person on Facebook going, well, you know, two things can't exist at the same time, as my thumbs like catch on fire, trying to light this crap up.
It is fascinating though, that, or what I love about, much like birth work, what I love about postpartum work is that you truly can make it your own. It can be very hard for parents when they call one postpartum doula and they might have seen information on their page about what a postpartum doula does. And then they find another postpartum, then they're calling around, mm-hmm. And then they find another postpartum doula doesn't do those exact same things. Mm-hmm. But that really is the joy in finding the right person for you. So this I'll speak to personally. When I was doing postpartum work kind of regularly, I had a very tired parent call me, and it was a dad, and he called and he was like, I need help. I was like, you sound like you need help.
You do sound like it.
And he asked me to go through what an average day might look like. And so I said, well, generally speaking, I'll arrive somewhere around 9:30, 10 o'clock. Kind of sit in and find out the update from overnight, if there's anything I need to know, if there's any set goals for the day or things that specifically will help make your day better by the time I leave. Mm-hmm. And it's the very first thing I do. And then generally speaking, I get about those things. But usually one of the first things I'll do is I will look in your fridge. If anyone has had the poor direction to buy you fruit or vegetables that are not cut up, I'm going to cut them up, because no one's going to breastfeed a baby with one hand and cut a cantaloupe with another. And
I don't even have a baby on my boob, and I am not cutting up a cantaloupe. That is the stupidest goddamn fruit that should come pre-packaged.
It's just not pragmatic. And, you know, you will just find your partner staring into that fridge crying because there's nothing that they can stick a fork in and be ready to go. So food matters. I said, and then generally speaking, I will get about helping with any feeding issues that might be coming up, making sure that there's a plan for dinner, that those things are pulled out, and then we'll create a schedule for what my next visit will look like. And he's like, well, I need someone who will clean the bathroom. And I'm like, then you need a housekeeper.
Yeah, you need a housekeeper.
Now, on occasion, I have cleaned a bathroom. But I came very quickly to know I don't like cleaning bathrooms.
I've only done it once.
Yeah. It is not in the realm of things I want to do as a postpartum doula.
I don't like cleaning my own bathroom. Do not want to clean other people's. So if I won't do it in my house, I'm not doing it in your house, which is why I don't cook either.
Baby laundry, parent laundry. Mm-hmm. I stopped doing male parent laundry.
Yeah.
When
weird.
I was busting out skid marked underwear. I'm like, okay. Yeah. On the regular, this one particular family I was working with, I don't know if there was IBS going on or something, but I always seemed to get stuck with the pile of laundry that had his skids in it.
Oh, no.
So I determined at that point that I would do any and all baby work and bedding that needed to be done. Because you know what? The bedding gets messy after you have a baby. We are sweating. We are oozing. There's lots of stuff that happens. And getting into a clean bed feels really great.
Doesn't it?
So laundry I will do, like bedding and baby laundry. And I will clean bottle parts.
Yep.
I will sterilize them. I will get formula ready for the next 24 hours. I will sit with a family and go over healthy bottle feeding practices, breastfeeding practices. I will sit there and watch White Chicks with you if that's what you need.
I watched The Price is Right one time in the family, and I thought, you're paying me $35 an hour for sitting here watching Price is Right. This seems wrong. And I get it. It seems wrong, but I couldn't help myself.
I feel like at that point you should have got up and made tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches.
Again, I don't cook.
Lots of grilled cheese sandwich and canned tomato soup. I mean, when I think of that show, I think of nurturing, like, you know, you're at your grandma's and you've got your soup and your sandwich and you got to watch that before the Flintstones come on or something. You know?
So last week when I was sick and I was like basically in my bed for two solid days, on the Wednesday when I was sickest, I put the TV on to Global and I watched the news. I watched the talk shows. I watched Taste of Our Lives. I watched General Hospital. I was like, and every now and then my eye would peek up and I'm like, yeah, okay. That reminds me of, you know, being 16 years old at home sick. And I had soup too.
Exactly.
It was a day to just be mothered, but I didn't have a mother to mother me, so I had to do it myself.
So like in a, that is very comforting sounding, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Oh, big heavy blanket. Mm-hmm. When someone comes and asks you, what does a postpartum doula do? Do you have like a stock answer?
I will say, you know, I'll say, you know, personally, you know, postpartum doulas work in a variety of different ways. Personally, the way I work is I will be there to help with baby care. I will be there to help with, you know, light housework, which does not include toilets, and laundry and things like that. And feeding support and helping to, you know, nurture the birthing parent through the initial stages of their postpartum period.
That pretty much sums it up. It's like being so I am at the age now where I'm in this, it's not even the in-between. I am at the age now where I am feeling that feeling of parenting the parent.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone describes or asks me to describe what I'm doing. But for the longest time, I related it to being, I'm sistering my sister. I'm siblinging my sibling who has just had a baby, just grown their family. But I am of the age now where my siblings are not having children.
So you're old now. So now you can mother them.
Now I can nurture them. But I have to, honestly, I struggle with that terminology and I wonder if others do too, especially when they hear that, and would it be a turnoff, mm-hmm, if their experience with their mother,
yeah,
was not that same description. But then I guess that goes to siblings too. I only knew one way to be a sibling, and that's to be like all in, all encompassing. What support looks like is whatever it looks like for you, and I'm doing it. You just blindly do it because it's what they need. And parenting is not always that way.
No.
So I'm trying to find a description. Like, is it a companion? Am I a wise companion?
Well, that, I mean, that's why I prefer, you know, to say that, you know, you nurture the birthing parent or the just birthed parent, and you help to educate them on being a parent and all things baby.
I think
that I don't think there's any value. I don't think that's a value laden statement.
No, because you are, you're a teacher, you're like a wise companion, a source of information, evidence-based information, but not set to overrule what your cultural norms are either. Yeah. So it most certainly comes with a judgment, mm-hmm, around all things, infant care, how you swaddle, how you care for your baby. Because quite often we are learning as well when we come into families that are not our cultural norm.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so not too long ago, someone on a parent group was asking about an arm's reach sidecar for their bed. And I had replied about the company you could buy the straps from here in Canada, even though you can't buy the whole thing here. And someone attacked me, a mother attacked me over Facebook. I had a Facebook attack. Saying that,
why didn't you call me? Why didn't you call me? I come in on my white horse with my sword in the air.
You are a doula. You should be promoting evidence-based care and not supporting these types of things that are dangerous to families. Okay.
What?
First of all, can we get, and so she really came at me. I said, first of all, hello, privilege. You are coming from a place of someone who goes by the rules. I get you. I said, let's review as an evidence-based individual sharing information that the arm's reach carrier did not meet the specs as Canada laid out for measurement. That was the first reason they were delayed coming into Canada. The second was there was a death of a baby. There was, and in the death of this baby, it was not caused by the arm's reach carrier. It was caused by somebody who only attached it from the bottom and not from the top. So that baby fell between the top and the bottom.
Yikes.
So this does not make co-sleeping or sidecars or anything like that irresponsible. It does not make it unsafe. We as mammals co-sleep with our children all the time. You need to look at, you know, the safe sleep 7. If you are a postpartum doula and you haven't shared that with anybody, the safe sleep 7 is what you want to look up and share and let people make decisions for themselves. I'm not sitting here promoting one thing or the other, because what's going to work for, like, your client who had to take a sleeping pill at night, guess what? She ain't co-sleeping, because no, that's not safe. You ever slept with somebody who's on a sleeping pill? You can get a roundhouse kick to the head and they'll never know that they did it to you.
Yep. And I mean, let's be honest. I mean, our role is to, yes, educate, but we, like in that particular instance, this family was already going to do it. This family was already probably going to do it. Right. It's yep. Just, so if that's the decision that's already been made, then our job then at that point is to offer them safe things to make whatever it is they're going to be doing safe. Like, if we're not talking about, you know, them, you know, I don't even know, some horrible thing to their child, this is something that's going to happen and it can be done safely. So if this is the case, then we need to make sure that they are aware of these safe things that can make that better for them and to protect baby and themselves and the dynamic of that parent-baby relationship so that everybody's getting sleep.
Yes. And so everyone feels secure in their knowledge. Coming into it, one of the biggest things that we need to do we need to learn coming into postpartum work is that we will come into a home that has their own learning, that has their own culture. And that people will, I'm not even talking about from outside of Canada. There are so many cultures, so many communities inside of Canada where families have passed along information. If a parent wants to decipher some of that information with you, take that as an opportunity to listen and to experience it. And I'm very sorry for any of the snoring that you guys are hearing. My dog, who is tired and is in heat, is sleeping in the room with me right now. And I have to keep her away from her brother because y'all
can't hear happened. A thing.
Okay, that's good. But when you come into those spaces, you really get an opportunity to learn about those values. There are many, many, like, do you remember the old rockers, the old bassinets that rocked, the old wood ones?
Yes. Oh, crap.
If you put a baby in that, they rock side to side. They, and if you swaddle them, they roll around like a beanie, you know, they just keep going. And it can look very violent. So you as the doula can say, well, having a baby roll over on their face in this amazing bassinet that's been passed down to you is probably not the goal you were going for. So let's find out, since you are going to use this, how we can make this safer for you and your baby. You know, we're not going to try and take away the crib that was made, you know, 100 years ago by your great uncle Al, you know. Or there's also, have you seen the hammocks? It looks like a hammock that hangs. So there's a bassinet and then there's a hammock that hangs over top of the bassinet.
Yes.
And does it meet the standard as laid out by Health Ontario or whatever?
Nope.
No. But Health Ontario and many health things also insist that a baby has to sleep on its back on a flat, firm surface. And have nothing in its space. Can you imagine yourself, like, our goal is to help a baby feel safe in that space while also adhering to the government regulation, but helping you balance out what that looks like and understanding why, if you put a baby not swaddled on their back in a cool space on a flat surface away from you, why they might not sleep well.
Right.
So therein is probably part of the biggest thing. I have so many clients who are so fearful around SIDS. It is like SIDS is the, it's the quicksand of the 80s.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks it's going to happen to them.
Yeah.
And then you realize later how very rare it is. And if you don't sit in those risk factors, how very low it is. It does not take away from how horrendous, how nerve-wracking, how
100%.
Stressful,
yep,
it is. But we also have to look at the fact that for a very long time, it was actually called crib death.
Right.
It wasn't called co-sleeping death. It was called crib death. And it was because that is where it was happening. So when we really need to help our clients slowly find their way to what feels right for them without judgment, with good information, but be careful. Mm-hmm. And this is the nuance, be careful and listen to what they're actually asking.
Yes. And I mean, that's, you know, again, that's how you come up with these, you know, the whole idea of this topic, you know, the many different aspects of what postpartum support looks like. And a lot of it, you know, really is going to be listening, not, again, I love this sort of terminology, you know, listening to understand, not listening to respond. Right. And listening to the nuances of what's being said, how it's being said, you know, and asking questions to dig deeper, you know, those open-ended questions to dig deeper, right?
Absolutely. Now, do you have any pleasant things that you, or roles that you ended up taking on as a postpartum doula that you never thought would be on the list of things that you'd be doing as a postpartum doula?
I'm not, Oh, do I understand the question?
You do have a headache.
I do. Things I never thought I'd do, but I do now. I don't understand your question.
So here's mine. I'll just start with my story. I went to a family who lived in Markham.
Right.
Oops. Lost my computer. I went to a family in Markham, and when I got there, the client was excitedly waiting for me just inside the front room. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a good day. She looks like she's on. She knows what she wants. It was second baby, but the first time she was asking for postpartum help. And this time she had had her baby in May.
Okay.
So she was all lit up by the time I got there. And she's like, I know what we're going to do today. And I'm like, all right. Have you had breakfast? She's like, yes, I did. I was like, okay, what are we doing? She's like, we are gardening. And I was like, okay. And that was what made her feel joyous. It was, yes. She had her first baby in October. She was stuck inside all winter with that first baby. She is a gardener for joy. There's plants all over her house too. And we went outside and we planted stuff. We dug in the dirt and we took turns because her pelvic floor and her abdomen and everything was sore from having a baby. So we took turns for 3.5 hours eating, sipping, gardening, and switching who was wearing the baby.
Wow.
Her husband, knowing that these were the things that brought her joy, just kept bringing us water, tea, juice, snacks, cheese. He ordered a sushi platter with all different sushi for us to sit on in a garden and eat in between doing gardening. And I did this with this family twice a week for 3 weeks, and I became her gardening and baby person. So we sat outside also, and she nursed outside the whole time that we were there, on and off. And she actually had a baby with a pretty wicked tongue tie, but at the time it was taking a while to get in to see anybody. But she really wanted to forge ahead with nursing, even though her nipples looked like ground beef. And, but it was probably one of the most unique things that I never would have heard about, never would have imagined that as a postpartum doula, that that's what support would look like. And I love being pleasantly surprised.
So I had a time, I never thought I'd do this. It felt so dumb at the time, to be completely honest. I had gone, she didn't need me. Like, she literally didn't need me, but she'd paid for the time. So one time I had actually, I don't normally do this, but they went out to, did they go out to an appointment, or they went out, her and her partner went out for lunch or something like that. And I just looked after the baby, like I basically babysat. But this one time she had been on Kijiji or whatever, Facebook Marketplace or whatever. And just went around. We spent the whole day going around picking stuff up that she had bought. I was in the car for like 3 hours with the baby in the back and driving and just chat. It felt weird. It felt really weird.
I can understand that, but that was like her project.
It's what she wanted to do. So I was like, okay. And at one point it wasn't at a house. Like she would leave the car to go pick the things up. Like if it was in an apartment, or if it was in, at one time it was like somebody's office building. There must've been like 5 places we went to. And I just stayed in the car with the baby, and the baby literally slept the whole time. And at one point we did pull over to feed the baby. She was bottle feeding, breast milk at this point. And it's like, yeah, okay, this is what we're doing today. You paid me, you know, however many dollars an hour to sit in this car with you and go around and pick shit up. It felt bizarre, but it's what she wanted to do. So that's what we did. Didn't bring me any joy with my goddamn hamstring in my hip, but whatever. I was so uncomfortable by the time that, and it was a nice car too, but you know, I was incredibly uncomfortable by the time that day was all over.
So speaking of uncomfortable, besides the skid marks in the underwear situation, have you ever been asked to do something as a postpartum doula that right away made you uncomfortable, whether you decided to do it or not? Or did you find out it was uncomfortable when you actually did it?
No, I mean, I think I've been pretty blessed in that people haven't generally asked me to do bizarre things. I don't do a lot of postpartum work either. This is why this would have been a really good topic for Susan, because she did a lot of postpartum stuff. I mean, I certainly, this one time, this family asked me to, I can't believe I did this. But I mean, how do you say no, right? Asked me to, they lived in an old, like early 1900s house in downtown Toronto. Okay, it was beautiful. But all the wood leading up the stairs into the top floor had all been painted white, which is fine. It looked gorgeous. But she wanted me to take a magic eraser and scrub off all the scuff marks on the stairs and the floors. Like, I thought, okay, how hard could it be? There were a lot of goddamn scuff marks. I didn't realize how many there were. And of course, I never do anything half-ass when it comes to things like that. I like dug in and was like cleaning and like, what the hell am I doing? And then I just kept saying to myself, I'm getting paid $35 an hour to do this. I'm getting paid $35 an hour to do this. I'm going to pay my bills doing this. Like, what else do you do?
So that mantra is a great mantra.
Yeah. I'm getting really paid helps. To do this. I could be making $7 an hour at Trevor's Drug Mart. I could be making $7 an hour at Trevor's Drug Mart.
I was sitting after having Abigail in my living room, big old oozing cesarean incision in like this really bizarre in-between place. Like it was a fog. It was postpartum depression, but I think it was the initial shock. Like my body was in some sort of shock. And I remember looking around and I could see dirt between my oven and the counter. Like you know, in right that little tight place in between the oven and the counter.
When I get my kitchen redone, I don't want to move that. It's going to be so gross.
We'll let them move it. But I could see it. And all of a sudden I started crying. And I was like, why does it look like that? Like, what made me cry was the knowledge that in that moment, if I wanted to, I couldn't deal with that myself.
Yeah.
And thankfully, my sister was puttering around and she'd walked through the room. I'd started crying and she backed up and she looked at me. She was like, what's going on? And I'm like, there's dirt between the oven and this is the counter and I can see it. And it to her, of course, in that moment, she wasn't going to question it. She's like, you know, she'd had a kid by now. She's like, it doesn't make any sense, but we're just going to deal with it.
Yeah.
And so she said, what type of music are you feeling like cleaning to today? And I said, what? And she's like, music. If you were to get up and you were to clean that, what would you be listening to? And so I said, I don't know, let's put on some Patsy Cline. And so she put on Patsy Cline and she pulled out the oven and she sang with me to Patsy Cline while cleaning the stuff up from between my oven and the cabinet, and she put it back.
Yeah.
I try to carry that into my postpartum experience. When I decide that there's things I will and won't do, I don't do bathrooms if I'm talking to someone ahead of time and they're asking. But if in that moment there is a woman sitting on her sitz bath on her toilet and she's looking around at her husband's pubic hair on the floor and that's making her cry, I'm going to clean that bathroom. I'm going to do the thing that she can't do in that moment that she wants to do. It seems on a regular day so simple, and in that moment feels so absolutely overwhelming.
Yep. Yeah. Now, and that's just it, right? Like, it's not look, if push comes to shove, I'm going to clean the bathroom. I really don't want to do the toilet, but if it means that this person is going to stop crying, of course I'm going to do it. And I think the thing to remember too is that, like, you come into something and, you know, the person's clearly upset, clearly crying, and where is your brain going? Like, your brain is going probably 8,000 different ways than to the actual space. So it's at that point where you have to ask those questions, like, hey, what's going on? You know, and just sit down and suss out. And, you know, it's like, oh, my mother-in-law's coming over. Da, 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 da. And then when you whittle it all down, you realize it's about, you know, the fact that there's dead flowers on the counter. Like, because a lot of times it doesn't make sense. Sometimes the crap that comes out doesn't make sense until you dig and dig and dig and dig and dig until you get to that base area where they happen to be. And that's where the whole idea of, you know, listening, and that's what, you know, the first part when you go into a client's home, you know, unless they're at a point where you're like, they're like, okay, yeah, we're doing great, but here's a list of things, you know, there's a list of things on the fridge to do. And you're like, okay, I guess that's what we're doing today. But you might be, you know, maybe just starting to work with them, and this baby might be 2 days old, and you're walking in and it's about discussion. It's about sitting. It's about holding that space. It's about listening to what they have to say and how you can make that day be better for them so that they can go to bed tonight after you've left feeling stronger, capable. Does that make sense?
That makes a whole lot of sense. Myself, I don't know. So a postpartum doula, if we look at it from a traditional standpoint, when we would, you know, you'd have a baby and your most often your aunties and stuff would come to the home, pardon me. And everyone would gather to assist. Or maybe it was one auntie, often the unmarried auntie who would come.
Yeah.
Or the younger sister who's not yet married who would come and do the work and do the help. And that person, from a traditional standpoint, would be responsible for all the things. They would be responsible for cleaning. They mm-hmm. would be responsible for taking care of any other kids. And they would be responsible for cooking meals that were appropriate for the postpartum parent. If they were younger, they were not responsible for showing you how to parent. If they were an older, wise person, they were responsible for helping you learn those things. Our goal as postpartum doulas is to do that without judgment. And often why we're hired is because they don't want the judgment or the right or wrong that comes with, you know, the baggage of family. And
yep.
So it is striking that balance for yourself too. What type of postpartum doula are you? Because there are many who feel very comfortable saying, I see that this is really distressing for you, but it does not fall in. Today I'll do this. It doesn't fall into what I generally do. So we're going to have to make a plan longer term for what that looks like. And that might be, we're going to put a list up at the front door. So every time a friend says they're coming to visit, they're going to grab a load of laundry and they're going to do it. They're going to clean that bathroom. They're going to bring a meal and put it on. And you're not going to serve them. They're going to serve you something and they're going to leave enough for dinner for everybody. Like, we're going to make a tangible, pragmatic list. Mm-hmm. So when someone says, what can I get you? You can say, oh, I actually made a list, and they can pick from that list.
Yeah.
I think that, and again, that is part of your role as a postpartum doula, is helping people, recognizing these things and helping people navigate that. And it might even take place in such a way that you're teaching them the vocabulary about asking for things.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is getting people comfortable with asking others that they're not paying for help and support. Because I think that's one of the big things that we have nowadays, especially as parents, is we don't feel comfortable asking people for help. And that is wrong on 8 million different levels. You know what I mean? That we need to get to a place where if our friends call up, or, you know, a cousin or whatever calls up and says, yeah, we're going to come over and see the baby. Is there anything we can bring you? Yeah, you can. And not just saying, no, we're fine. You're not fine. You just had a baby. There isn't anything fine about you. Even if you think you're fine, you're not. You need to, you always should have a running list of what you need, and making sure our job really then at that point is to make sure that they feel comfortable asking for that help. And what do you call it? Modeling that, that requirement of support.
That's again, part of the whole teaching, right? You might be teaching how to swaddle, but you're also teaching someone how to say, yes, there are things that would really help me, and normalizing it. Absolutely. Yeah. Normalizing it.
Absolutely. Let's be honest. We say that, we don't do it ourselves.
Well, it's because it turns into that whole thing of you ask someone to do something, but then you watch them do it. And it's like, I can do that better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you do the dishes? Well, that's not how you do the dishes. I really, truly have tried to let that go.
I'm almost 52 years old. It's taken me this long to actually get to the point where I can say, yeah, you know what? I need some help from you. I need you to do this for me. But it took me 52 years to get to that point.
Yes. And you just said something right there that was really important. I'm trying to drop it. I need you to do this with me. I need you to do this for me. I'm just like, you need to do this.
Yeah.
I'm trying to let go of the help me do this stuff. It's like, no, because this actually, I'm not doing this at all. You're doing this. This is on your plate. And yeah, you can choose the things you want to be on your plate, or you can get from the list that I've created. Either way, so long as it gets done, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like everyone has their daily chore and everyone has their weekly chore. You know, it is something that's done once a week. You know, like, you know, Abby does the once a week, Abby does the bathroom upstairs. Mm-hmm. Xander does the bathroom downstairs. Megan does on the weekend all the laundry except for Xander's, because he likes to do his own. Like everyone has their weekly and everyone has their daily, and that is absolutely reasonable. And often, actually, speaking of which, with families, helping the family identify, if you have been the person who's been taking care of everything as the birthing person, now we need to reorganize that. And sometimes literally putting up sticky notes, here are the things that need to be done this day, here are the things that need to be done this way, after discussion. And people can literally walk into the kitchen, pull the sticky note and say, oh, okay, it's Tuesday. We need to make sure that the garbage goes out, if you weren't putting out the garbage, checking that the food garbage has been removed and it's not rotten up the kitchen. Cleaning out, you know, having someone who comes and says, what can I do? Oh, it is Friday. Fridge needs to be cleaned out because groceries come tomorrow.
God, yeah.
You know? Helping coordinate all of that in the postpartum is hugely helpful. And I think it's an overlooked or maybe underconfidence item in the postpartum doula realm. Grab that confidence, make those yep. lists, and help yeah. your client get in.
Yeah. And I mean, again, like this is what we do. The job of a postpartum doula is not to just go in and take over and run the house. The goal is to help this parent learn to parent and run their own lives so that they feel comfortable doing that.
Like, yeah, the modeling, right?
Yeah.
Man, I mean, there's so many things we can talk about around that and other anomalies. I'm sure we will come to it. One of the topics we would most certainly be addressing is when you find yourself working with a family in a family dynamic that is abusive.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That is a whole, whether it's in birth or whether it's in postpartum. I think that's a topic we should address, and that would be hugely helpful to families because it is so shocking the first time you walk into it and you start to recognize it. And what do you do with that? It might actually be a great experience for us to have a psychologist on with us to go through, you know, moving through those things. We are 3 times more likely to be the victim of abuse during our pregnancy and in the first year postpartum.
Yes.
And we as doulas end up watching these things unfold, and we wonder, it's like, I don't know about you, but when I've watched the abuse unfold, and I've only ever seen physical abuse once, but you watch the narcissism, you watch the control, you watch the passive aggressive anger, and you watch it develop, and having tools to be able to manage that in the moment for yourself to still do your job.
Yep.
And still be a help without it being traumatic to you would be super, super helpful, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good idea. We have any, you know, psychologists listening?
Oh, I have one I'm already thinking about.
Okay.
A former client and postpartum psychologist who is here in Toronto and who's taken care of plenty of my clients as well. And is an absolutely wonderful, wonderful resource for such things. And I think having Suzanne, when she's back on, to talk about the roles and the boundaries, particularly in night doula work. Because I'm going to say that probably requires a whole lot more decision-making about your boundaries. Things happen at night.
Yes.
People act differently at night. People have different expectations at night. People have wrong expectations at night. And often we find ourselves working when people can, how do I put this? When people can afford night help, which is generally expensive, especially if you're having it regularly. I'm sure many of us have come across people who also feel entitled to tell us how we should do our job.
Yep.
And so setting up strong emotional boundaries for yourself and knowing when to simply walk out of the house.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that topic as well.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool. Awesome.
So be a good postpartum doula.
Yeah. And don't feel guilty if your role on any given day is just to sit and listen and hold that space. That's okay.
That is often right where you start. And then you get them comfortable with making a list that you can follow. And then you get them comfortable with making a list other people will follow.
Yeah.
And it turns into a great day. And by the time you're walking out of that family's life, hopefully they are feeling really empowered to continue to do the things and insist on the things that make them feel like they can do this parent thing.
And set boundaries for yourself.
Yes.
And stick to those boundaries.
Absolutely. Know how many days a week you can handle working with other people. Peopling is a big deal right now, you know?
Postpartum doulas are in huge demand right now. But I mean, I know several who are, you know, I can't do every day. Like I won't do every day. I'll do a couple of days here or there, but I can't do every day. And I think postpartum doulas, because they're in such great demand, we're approaching burnout.
Absolutely. So right now, I hope y'all are taking care of yourselves. You have your strong boundaries in place. You know what you need for your income, and you're not trying to stretch yourself thin just because the demand is there.
Yep.
So now all you have to do is take your little fingers over, rate, review, and subscribe. 5 stars are always welcome. And what's even more welcome is we want to hear your stories.
Yeah.
What's tell us. Email them. Where can they email us?
Thepragmaticdoulas@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and send, that's where much of the stuff comes from is from Instagram. You can the Pragmatic Doulas on Instagram. Just shoot us a message. We all get them. And we'll read it out on the air. If you have, you know, stories you want to share with us, something cool that's happening with you, postpartum doula story? We'd love to hear it.
Oh my goodness. I bet there are some really great postpartum doula stories out there.
I'll bet.
Can I share one that was
yeah, absolutely
and probably horrifying all at the same time?
Oh, Jesus.
Just to wrap this one up, I arrived to the house of a family who had had twins, and it was their first babies, and they have no family here, and they had tried for 1 week to do it solo, and I got called to come in the morning, and they were very specific. They're like, we need a nap. Can you come tomorrow so we can nap in the morning? I'm like, absolutely. I'll see you at 9:30. They both answered the door, I guess, very excited that someone was here. And it was obvious that they had both rolled out of bed. Yeah. Well, Dad had gotten up in the middle of the night and just dropped his pajama pants completely and went to the bathroom and forgot that he was a free being. So as the door opened, I just saw his hip, and she just backed up. She's like, come in. And he was walking away, holding one of the babies, buck ass naked from the waist down, going, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I forgot.
Oh my God. And she didn't even realize either. I mean,
she had postpartum, like the giant postpartum underwear on, no top, and just like an open, like a dressing gown type thing, but it wasn't tied up because she was holding a baby. Right. So they were both just a raging hot mess. He's half naked. She's postpartum. And they're both the essence too. When I walked in, they both needed a shower.
They needed a nap and a shower.
Yes. So, I mean, one of the first things I did was I sent them to shower in, they had an extra bathroom upstairs. So I sent them to shower, and I said, you're going to shower and I'm going to change your bed. And I'm just going to change your bed. I'm going to stick the babies in the bassinet. So give me a minute. And so they went back to bed in a nice clean bed, showered, and they slept the whole time I was there with the babies. And there was already bottles ready. They had like the pre-ready bottles.
Yeah.
And I fed the babies that way. And it was hilarious. So I can't wait to hear any interesting, funny, hilarious postpartum stories.
That's hilarious. I'd have been like, oh, I cannot look either of you. Well, I could look her in the eye, but I cannot look you in the eye, sir, any longer.
I have seen your buttocks.
I have seen your meat and two veg, and I am not interested.
Steak and potatoes.
Your jiggly bits. Oh, baggers and mash.
Yep.
Oh God. I'm so tired. All right. Cool. So yeah, got a story like that? We want to hear it.
Line it up, send it our way, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Yep. I hope everybody has a good one. I hope everybody has a great weekend and a happy Valentine's Day, because this is when it's coming out.
Oh, that.
Have a happy Valentine's Day. Which the hate that holiday.
Half price chocolate, July 5th or February 15th.
I actually have so much chocolate in my house. I had gotten myself some Purdy's for Christmas, but I realized when I did that, I just got like an assorted, but then I realized I really don't like all of the assorted ones. So I thought, you know what I really want? I want like caramel and I want nuts. Sure enough, they had them. Their chocolate is ridiculously expensive. So got myself some of that. Happy Valentine's Day to me, sitting in my drawer beside my bed. Cause I'm not sharing.
Good.
Nobody, I'm not sharing with you. All right. I hope everybody has a good one. Stay safe.
Bye everyone.
Thank you.